Today we are still a very familiar crowd, actually. Now we're only 8 of us, and I see Trump, Michelle, and Robert Bowser, our supporters usually. And but I think since the spaces will be recorded anyhow, it would be nice if Casper maybe can kind of introduce our story for all the new listeners and how everything started and why we're meeting every weekend to chat about art here.
Yeah, so welcome everyone. I know this is like a very cozy spaces, but Ewan said it's more like for us to have a very intimate discussion and chat, instead of having like a few hundred people and having to fight for discussion spot, right? And yeah, it's recorded, so I think that's where most of our listeners get most of their listening time in anyway. So we're not too worried about the numbers that's on the space. I think some of you might have already heard this, so I'll try to keep it as summarized as possible, I guess, about how I started this Angel's Wing Gallery. I actually started, as with most people probably, in the NFT space, just collecting 10K PFP projects, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But after a while, I guess it gets a bit more of the same thing all over and over and over again, with influencers shilling, people just rushing in. Then you move on to the next project. It gets old real fast. And it was in one of these 10K projects. I mean, you guys would have heard of Boss Beauties, that I actually saw a derivative art that was being drawn by an independent artist. And I was like, wow, this artist is really talented. The piece is really beautiful. I've bought it. But I realized that these independent artists do not have a full marketing team, or like a full collective voice behind them to shill their work. And that's why I thought of just investing a little bit of ETH into a on-cyber gallery, and then putting multiple artists' work in the same gallery, so you have like a cross-pollination of viewers. And I would say so far so good. The results speak for themselves. Ultimately, you want sales, right? And we've been seeing sales come in pretty quick and fast. For some artists, and I'm taking that as a good sign that there's validation in this model. That's yeah. So I think that's the key thing that I want to leave it here, that the gallery is dedicated for independent artists. And if you're listening to this and you'd like to be featured in our gallery, just hit one of us up by via DMs, and we'll be happy to consider your art.
Yeah, and also every Sunday we also have a nice Discord where we are, a group of friends chilling stuff and having fun. It's also cozy there, so if you are listening to this and you're not wanting to wait every Sunday to get in contact with us, yeah, maybe consider to join our Discord. You are welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Casper and Johannes. I think despite our still small circle, I think this project has been a great success because, as you said, the goal is basically to help the artists to make sales. And I think we made a lot of sales already in the gallery, or the gallery helped most of us to make sales so far. So I would say it's quite a success. And also, like, our group is a very welcoming place. So also on the Discord that Johannes mentioned. So yeah, let's start with talking about the art of the two artists that we're featuring today. So one of them is Nadia, and the other one is Jagnetic. So if you actually go into the gallery, you find the artwork with Nadia and Jagnetic actually right next to each other in the east wing on the left wall. And once you're actually there, you will actually see that how well the pieces, I would say, complement each other, not only in terms of color choices, but also because both chose the female character as their main theme. Yeah, so I would like to invite Nadia to speak now. So Nadia, she is an artist from Chicago, and I know her for a while now. we met through one of the daily art trains on Twitter, and I really liked her minimalistic and colorful style of her artwork. And but I didn't have a chance yet to talk with her in depth about her art. So today I'm actually really excited that she's with us today to talk a bit about her story and the meaning behind her artwork. Yeah, so the stage is yours, Nadia.
Oh, thanks so much, Yunia. I'm really happy to speak with you all and really happy to talk to you a little bit more because, yeah, I know, like you said, we haven't really had a chance to chat. Yeah, I guess I can share a little bit about my story. I love drawing, so I've been drawing pretty much my whole life since I was a kid. No formal training. I've had a lot of random career paths in my life, and it was really just the last year, actually, that I started dedicating myself more to my art. And I do actually have a small business where I do, like, I draw, I do calligraphy, and I have an Etsy shop where I do stickers. And then on the other side, yeah, I started doing NFT art probably about 6 months ago, I want to say. I was trying to think about that for this space. Yeah, I think I got into NFT 6 months ago. So I do all of my NFTs on my iPad on Procreate. So it's digital art. I draw everything on my iPad. And yeah, that's kind of what my story is.
Yeah, so yeah, thank you for sharing this. I can relate in many ways with your own story. I also got into NFT around a similar time frame. And like you, I didn't have any formal training in art, but I also just loved drawing and painting since my childhood. Yeah, and so I started a bit earlier to dedicate myself to art, like a couple years earlier, but it was just like last year when I took this more seriously when I got into NFTs. And so you, so the pieces that you are exhibiting in our gallery, it's called Dune Inspiration, and it's inspired by the movie Dune. I unfortunately haven't seen the movie yet, so maybe you can tell us a bit about it and what inspired you actually to create these pieces. And I was also wondering whether you had any particular like scenes in mind when you create these pieces, because since I didn't see the movie, and I'm also not really familiar with the story behind everything.
That's, you should change that, June. Everybody should view the movie.
I play the PC game.
Yeah, I definitely agree. For sure, I highly recommend checking out the movie. I first read the book before I heard that the movie was coming out. It was like right before I found out Dune was coming out, I read the book. And it's kind of, I don't know if I can give it a great description, but focused on the kind of like a story of this guy, this kind of almost like a coming of age and coming into this, these like mystical strengths he has and moving to a new planet called Dune. So I got really obsessed with the story even before seeing the movie. And then once the movie came out, it was just a whole nother level of obsession, I would say. Just mostly everything about the desert, just all of the scenes, something about it was just like really drew me in. Just everything about like how powerful and mysterious the desert is. And also there are some like really peaceful kind of calming moments. So I don't know if there was a specific scene that I had in mind, but it was honestly just everything that was shot in the desert, and like the cinematography was just so amazing. I think I actually had a dream about it one night, and then I just kind of decided I wanted to start sketching. So that's kind of how it started. I was like, I just really want to start sketching this right away. So that was part of it, you know, part of it was Dune. And then on the other side, I've always loved drawing women. That's just kind of how I've been since I was a child. I'm not really sure. I just started drawing female portraits. So I kind of just wanted to combine those two, like my love of drawing women and then also Dune. And then I just started sketching, and several different pieces came out, like four pieces I have right now, and I'm hoping to add more. I'm still sketching every day, so hopefully I'll add more, but that's kind of the general sense of the collection.
Yeah, I think the collection Dune, it's quite different than the other the other styles of your pieces, because you have also like Girls and Candy, which is a very colorful collection, and I really like it. Compared to the more neutral palette that you used for Dune, but it's of course perfect for like the desert scene.
Very important part of this world is a drug spice. I think we need also some psychedelic pieces when you have taken the drug. So that's the next piece I'm missing. Some spice related artwork, because it's a very powerful drug in this movie world.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. Definitely, let the spice flow. That's a great idea for our next piece.
Are there any other questions for Nadia from our audience?
Yeah, so I also really like this color palette and mysterious feeling that it conveys. And I noticed that one of the pieces, this Breathe piece, is animated, so which really adds to the experience, especially in the gallery. It really pops on the wall. Is that something you started to do and want to do more of in this collection, or I'm just curious about the process that led to this piece being animated?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I definitely wanted to experiment more with this piece. So yeah, I started off with just kind of the dune as the main focus, and then just wanted to make it very like calming and just kind of focus on, again, yeah, like the powerful nature of the dunes. And then I wanted to make it more ethereal, and I really wanted to put some stars in there. I just thought it was missing something. So I was like, I really want to get some stars. And then I honestly just wanted to experiment. So yeah, like you mentioned, I haven't really done much animation. So I was like, oh, I think this might be really fun if the stars could be twinkling and I could play around with that, and it would just make it like a little more dynamic and a little bit more fun and something new for me. So I did spend quite a bit of time playing around with that on my iPad and seeing how it would look. And yeah, that's kind of how it happened. Just wanted to experiment with something new, and I definitely want to do that more. So I think, especially like talking about spice, I feel like that could be a really fun next piece if it was animated and had something dynamic in there.
Yeah, it really works. So that's great.
Yeah, so this 3D virtual gallery is really asking for animated pieces and pieces that are colorful and powerful. Usually you are not always clicking on the video on OpenSea, but in the gallery, the video is starting automatically, and even the sound, you get a very different experience than just listening, watching it on OpenSea. So you should definitely try it out to design a piece just for a 3D gallery, because it's differently.
Well, I guess the question for Nadia that I have would be, you sound very adventurous. Like you said, just experimenting with all different kinds of techniques and media, right? So I very coincidentally bought a piece, which I'm not sure whether you saw, which was more of like a collab. There was a artist, I think it was lore.eth, and then a music artist. So I thought the music kind of added a bit to the experience, and I'm wondering whether would adding music be something that you would consider in kind of like completing your art, or are you mainly still focused on just the visual aspect of it?
Oh, I didn't see that piece that you mentioned. I'm gonna have to check that out. That's a great question. I feel like, yeah, like you said, I'm always experimenting every day. I feel like I'm still kind of figuring out my style, and it's always changing. So I would be open to that. I think music does add a lot, and there's several artists that I follow that have music, and I do think it adds that like extra layer. It would just, you know, it'd be a new fun challenge for me. I think I'm just obviously, like, I love drawing, and the digital art is like where my passion is, but I would be open to adding music, and I love that idea, and I would definitely consider that. So yeah, I'm really, thank you for all these great ideas. Now I feel like I have some good, cool new pieces that could come up.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, it's all part of the journey, right? The artistic journey. So I think where I'm coming from with leading on from Espresso's comment about animation as well as music is that I have quite a few friends who feel very strongly that art, NFTs especially, artists should be maximizing the use of the digital space. And they feel so strongly about that they don't buy art that is not animated or doesn't have music incorporated into it, because they say that they rather just buy the physical art. Whereas if they bought something that was in a digital space or in the metaverse, so to speak, they will want an additional dimension to it, which is either it has to be animated or it has to have some form of music or ability to conjure up an extra dimension of feeling compared to just looking at a static image. So I'm not sure if anybody has comments to that, but yeah, that's just where I'm coming from.
Today is the evening of alpha for me. Kasper, we should figure out if it's possible to let the phone vibrate while looking at an NFT. This would be the first NFT which has animation, sound, and it might vibrate your phone. Woo-hoo.
Yeah, lots of alpha on this chat.
Yeah. So Kasper, that's a very interesting point of view. I think so. First thought is that it's a very like multimedia maximalist view, like, oh, we have this shiny new tech, let's use it to the max, which I assume will kind of fade over time. Personally, I have a very different reason for preferring NFTs over physical art, which is really the ease of collecting. So it's so much easier to collect and receive the art. So that's really what I'm placing emphasis on. And of course, that leads to collecting too much. Like, I don't have enough wall space. So, but that's like a luxury problem. But I don't know what you think. Is this really the future of NFT art, that it has to be multimedia?
No, of course not. It's up to the artist, right?
Yeah, it's up to the artist, but I feel like if I go onto the so-called premium marketplaces like Foundation, you see that a lot of the art pieces are animated, right? And those tend to command higher prices.
But
I'm sorry if it's getting out of topic, but
Kasper, I know from the past that there were some galleries which tried to play music in the background because it was a new experience, and in the end, all traditional galleries are now again silent because it's somehow a trend, you know. And then in the end, everybody will be oversaturated about it, and then we will go back to just still images. It's always the same, right?
Yeah, I guess also we might also be in the experimental stage where people are just trying out new media, right? We'll see how this develops.
But yeah, maybe you could. So from a technical point of view, I was wondering how you are creating these images. Are you using Photoshop, or are you using vectors for it? This was something I'm a little bit interested, because I like to understand how the work was crafted. Can you tell me a little bit about your creative process?
Yeah, so I'm drawing everything on my iPad on Procreate. Procreate's the only app that I use. I don't know if you're all not familiar. It's like Adobe Illustrator. So I have, I pretty much just use my iPad pencil and I'm sketching everything. So it usually starts, I usually have like just an image in mind, or I'll have a reference image that I'm looking at on my iPad. And then I just kind of pick up different colors, and just make like several different layers on Procreate. But yeah, I'm drawing everything by hand, so I'm not using Photoshop or anything like that. I'm pretty much just drawing it out. And the most effects I've used, I guess, are like when I made the animation. but otherwise I'm pretty much just sketching it out on there as I go.
Yeah, yeah,
thanks for sharing this with me. I'm learning.
Yeah, so Procreate is actually the probably most popular app for hand-drawn digital art, I would say. So like my personal favorite is actually Adobe Fresco, which is very similar to Procreate. And the basic function actually is free, which is great. And for whatever reason, I just kind of prefer this compared to Procreate.
Oh, I haven't used that. I'm definitely going to keep that in mind. That sounds great.
Yeah, and you have actually also some basic animation features in there that you can use for free, which is nice.
That's awesome. Yeah, nice.
So are there any other questions to Nadia? Otherwise, we move on to Shagnetic's work, who would have been our second guest originally, but she couldn't join because she is actually traveling today. And I had a chat with her about her artwork, and I'm actually feel really honored that she trusted my understanding of her artwork enough to let me basically present her artwork today. And I can't really speak for her. I just trying to describe her art through my eyes and how I see everything. And so she basically told me that she was born in Accra, which is the capital of Ghana, and she moved to New York City with her family at the age of 10. And she is she still feels very connected with her identity as a West African woman and with the local culture there. I think she still speaks three local languages, and yeah, she still has family there. I think this probably explains the close tie to the area. And she became an artist around the age of 5 or 6, as she told me, basically at the first moment when she was actually able to hold a pen in her hands. And like the born artist, I would say, right? And so for her, art has always been a form of expressing herself, her feelings and emotions, and how she basically sees the world around her. I asked her also how she got into NFTs, and she said that I assume probably last year she was introduced to Web3 through a friend who actually gifted her her first NFT, which was a crypto common, which is really nice, I think. If you're looking at her, she has three collections on OpenSea, and if you look at her pieces, you will notice that she basically just portrays women. And I asked her why she basically chose women as her cloud in Chinese. And she realized that it was like really short. And if you look at her other, the names of other pieces or the title of other pieces, I don't know, the Dumb or Princess Tum Tum. So it kind of fits, I think, into this style. So, yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, this is not really a question per se, but how I managed to get Chagnetic's pieces into the gallery. I mean, she's such a popular artist, right? She was actually one of the first artists I approached for the gallery, because I saw that her pieces were really beautiful. I mean, for me, I'm not an artist. I get very attracted to the simple things like colors. And when I saw how her Water Magic collection had a very nice contrast between a very old-looking, antique-looking art style, but yet had modern splashes of color, it really pulled me to those pieces. So I immediately wrote to her, and while we were talking, I think her pieces were just like selling like hotcakes. And after a while, it became so difficult to keep track of her soul pieces that I think we just let it slide, because it was not possible to keep refreshing her pieces fast enough anyway. But it was really nice of her to get back to me after a while and said, "Hey, I remember we had this conversation before about featuring my work in the gallery, would there still be spots available? And to that, I said, I would be really honored because, I mean, she's such a popular artist. I think she's one of the few artists where the secondary sales are also at a very healthy level. And I just was very grateful that an artist of her stature still remembered our old conversations. And I think it speaks volumes about the artists themselves when they remember the people that got in touch with them before they got big, right? So that's just a small story I wanted to share.
Yeah, so that's what we want to help artists to achieve, right? Through this gallery, to get to this.
But she was too fast. Her artwork just rocketed. Meanwhile. But also from a technical point of view, I'm really amazed from her style because she's that she's just drawing one line, and it's perfect, and she don't has to correct them, which means that she's really talented making an expression, a wonderful image with just one stroke. This is something which is impressing me. Usually. Most of the times you would try multiple lines to get near to the final result, but she's just doing one stroke and it fits. And it's a pity that she's not here because I would like to ask her if she's drawing everything just on the paper and with watercolors, or if she's also adding these golden rings, for example, on Lady June, if she's adding them later on. So that would be my question. How she's mastering this level.
Yeah, I think
because I would expect that she's drawing the lines by hand, painting the woman with color, and then she's adding these golden pieces later on. But that's something I would like to ask her.
Yeah, I think we definitely need to have her on Spaces again sometime in the future to just talk in more depth about her style and the way how she creates art. And as Casper said, I think I'm also actually really happy that she actually joined or agreed to exhibit some of her pieces in the gallery. And I really enjoyed talking to her. I think most people actually attracted to her very masterful technique and use of color and this fluid style that she has. But I actually think that she put really a lot of thought in her pieces, not in addition to the technique, but particularly also what really draw me in regarding her like water magic collection was actually that she put this in a very interesting historical context. So when I actually saw her collection for the first time, I felt immediately transported back into the 1920s. And because I'm very drawn to jazz music from that time. And when I saw all these women dressed with feather saris, which was like a very prominent fashion thing at that time, I felt really like it really resonated with me. And I actually think this was also the inspiration behind this collection that she really wanted to create these pieces that draws people in. Into this time, and she really loved this area, like the 1920s, which is also known as the Golden Age, and where like every form of art, like jazz music and like theaters, like variety theaters, where all these things, also literature, where all these things were flourishing at the time. And there were lots of like global changes in society, and so for her, it was like a very magical era, and women could, for the first time, express themselves more freely in public. They were also less socially oppressed. And she also told me that one of her favorite artists and writers are actually from that time. And during, yeah, as I said, I mean, I really love jazz from the time, and during my conversations with her, we actually found that we basically share the same love for this type of music. And this was one of the reasons why her artwork resonates so much with me, in addition to this very masterful use of technique, but particularly also the topic that she tried to portray in her collection, Water Magic. And for me, it really came through that she wanted to portray this this period in history. I think that's why also she is referring actually that she painted ghosts, like ghosts from the past or from this period. And I'm not sure how familiar you guys are with this time, but like for me, like one of the symbols of that era was actually Josephine Baker, who was an African-American singer and dancer who later became a French citizen. So she moved to Paris in her young age and became really famous there as an entertainer on stage. So Josephine Baker was really like a, if I think about the hair, like the image of Josephine Baker immediately comes into my mind. And I think Gignetic actually was explicitly referring to her in her collection. So she has like two pieces that were titled Princess Tam Tam and La Conga Bicotti. And so the last one, La Conga Bicotti, was actually a song that was performed by Josephine Baker in the movie Princess Tam Tam, where she played a lead role. And this was kind of the connection that I got when I saw it. I'm not sure whether she's actually referring to, I could imagine that she might have also referred to additional historical figures in her collection, but this was the one I just immediately came into my mind when I saw her collection. Yeah, and if you actually look at her pieces, she used the element feather, I think, in almost all her pieces in the collection. And it was not just a very recognizable fashion accessory to symbolize the time when Mim, for the first time, she started to wear shorter clothes and use feather as a hair accessory or like as a element that was part of or the clothing at that time. And I think the very masterful, I think Gignetic really uses the element of feather in a very masterful way, I think, because she intentionally uses to tie her collection together to give it a coherent look. And so it was kind of versatile in all her pieces, but also to give it a consistent style. And so Johannes mentioned before that he would be really interested in how she actually created these pieces, like the process that she used. And I'm sure not whether you noticed, but the background of these pieces are actually not paint, but she used stains from black tea. And I think this is the reason what gives them whole this really nice vintage look.
Adding the layers digitally, yeah?
No, this is just all painted. Like,
yeah, I mean, you're right.
She used like stains from real black tea to create the background.
Yeah, so some other artists are just spilling their coffee over it and rubbing on it. A similar effect, right?
That's true.
A known technique, right?
I think it's still, so I'm not very familiar, I have to say, with this type of technique, but I think it's kind of popular or has been popular in certain periods of art history to use
coffee and tea. Coffee and tea are have wonderful effects to the material. So if you want to make some paper looking old, you just have to add coffee or tea on it and wait a little bit, and it really changes when drying. It's a wonderful effect.
Yeah, that's true. I think a lot of watercolor artists actually using. I think I've seen. As you said, mentioned it now. When you just mentioned that, comes to mind. I've seen like coffee stains also in watercolor artwork. So
we have to stop. We have to stop to talk about this piece. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because you snapped it, right?
Yeah. Yep. So yeah. I'm sorry. It's sold.
Wait, Johannes, you bought it?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So I bought it live while you are talking. I was afraid that Espresso is giving me another bit war or something.
Yeah, you never know.
I mean, it is a great piece. I think this is probably one of my favorites in her collection.
So I'm sorry. It's gone.
Congrats, man. Congrats.
Yes, congrats.
I mean, yeah, so it was fair game because she tweeted it at the start of our spaces.
So, I waited 1 minute. Yeah.
It's not insider information. There's no insider trading here.
No, it was on OpenSea, you know. And I posted it on Twitter. I waited 2 minutes. I decided, it's still there. Send the money from Coinbase to my wallet. Was thinking, I'm sorry. No, it's gone. It's mine. So, yeah, I have looked on this collection for 1 week now, because we prepared the space, and I have also looked on that piece before, because I think she listed it a while ago. She made it popular on Twitter. She talked with her followers about it. For example, that she moved the eyes from the woman around until it fits perfectly, and so I was already very aware of that image.
Nice, nice. Okay, so then we transition over to the next piece of the regular programming, right?
Oh, let me, I wanted to add something, because when I actually talked to her, there were two thoughts that I found extremely interesting that came up in our conversation. So one is the question, how explicit does the artist need to be in his or her art statement? So during my chat with her, I noted that she really enjoyed when people could make sense of the meaning behind her pieces, like by themselves, without requiring too much explanation from her side. So I think she purposely kept the details or the explanation on the wake side, I think. And we've been a bit discussing about it, whether artists need to be more explicit explaining what the art mean, or just let people find it out by themselves, the meaning behind it. And I think I personally also prefer like to be more on the wake side. And I think it's kind of so interesting because, art is in general very subjective, and it's kind of good to provide the room or space to let people decide on their own what they want to see in the art. And if this kind of reflects the way the artist intended, yeah, it's great. But if the person sees something different, it's fine too, right? And the other thing that I wanted to mention is, I think this can also be, because last time I remember that Casper started to ask our two artists that have been featured during last spaces what advice they would have for other artists or like artists starting out. And so I can't really give advice, but like Jagnesh, she said something that really made me think. And she said that she is very attracted to art that are rather provoking emotions than being perfect regarding like how regarding the technique, that it's really perfectly made, that it's like it perfectly represents like an object. And this, what she said, really made me think, because I also think that artwork doesn't really need to be perfect. Like being imperfect, actually, it gives this whole uniqueness, right, to the artwork. And it makes it kind of also stand out, I think, because if everything is just perfect, there would be like no difference anymore. And I think even by being imperfect, a piece can actually evoke more emotions. And I think also coming back to what we discussed before, that do we really need to max out like all the technology to draw attention to art through animation, through anime animation, through music? No, I don't think so. And particularly if you look at the, this water magic collection by Genetic, I mean, you see, she really used like the most minimal color palette, and it's just like a very the most basic also painting medium that people have been using since like centuries, just paint, right? And I think one of the reasons is because it's really the emotions really come through, and I mean, you don't really need so much to tell a story. I think being imperfect, there is kind of also a tendency actually towards perfection.
Add my comments. I'm still not at the level of Yoon when it comes to all these historical significant events and all that. I do agree that in the vagueness of art, that's where it gets its beauty, right? Because you have people like me who look at the artwork and get attracted by how there's a single theme behind the collection, which is your feathers, the very vintage style and the colors, and I like it. I appreciate it. Unfortunately, I wasn't as fast as Johannes, but I still like the collection. But then you will have your other type of collector, like you and Johannes or Espresso, who could be even more educated about the art and can find a deeper meaning. Maybe they'll appreciate it more and pay more, I don't know. But I think art is meant to be for everyone, right? And
yeah. So I think it's the complete opposite of what, for example, my father is doing, right? He's sitting on a piece of an image for months, right? He's planning every stroke in advance. He's painting over and over, and you really see a big difference, a completely different style. So this is what got me here. There's the lightness. The lightness of her paintings. Yeah, she's just drawing it and it's done. Yeah? This is so the complete opposite of what I'm used on our piece. It's a complete difference. The complete opposite side, where everything must be perfect until it's done.
German perfection, yeah. As always.
A completely different style. We stop when it's done. And you all know how long one piece is in the making, months, which might be not the best approach, but that's how it is.
I think probably in art there are no rules, and
no, but
basically just go according to their own feelings and schedule.
Of course, other people are just attracted to exactly this, that somebody invested time in it. But on the other hand, as I said, I admire the possibility to make something so beautiful in I'm not sure how long she's using how much time it takes her, but it looks like it was done with very much ease, you know. This is what I really like, that it just looks like she painted it, and it's just like a fresh piece, you know.
She makes it look easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though it might have been really hard. Yeah.
Of course, it takes a full life to be able to look it easy, make it look easy, right?
Yes, exactly.
Sorry to interrupt you guys. I do think I'm gonna hop off for the day, but thank you so much for having me in this space, and it was really super fun chatting with you all.
Yeah, you have to stay for some minutes. We wanted to talk about launching strategies, and you could tell us about your strategy before you go.
Yeah, but if you have to go, then don't feel pressured to stay.
No, there's pressure.
I can definitely try to. I don't know if I honestly have the best launching strategy. I think for me, it was the pieces I drew for Dune, I really wanted to share with the world. And I don't know if I had like a thought out strategy of when to launch. I had four pieces, and I felt like that was told a pretty good story so far. And I just thought I should put it out in the world and see how it goes. maybe not the best launching strategy, but
yeah, but I think in general it's good to not kind of wait too long before launching. So kind of the core question that we were thinking of as a beforehand, that's probably something that could be good to discuss a bit, is should we try or should artists try to kind of complete the full collection and then launch, or is it better to launch after with some pieces then add more pieces, and how do you signal when the collection is done compared to when you've kind of want to add more to it? So any thoughts on this? For example, you mentioned that you wanted to add a few more pieces to this collection. Have you thought any about kind of how big it you want it to be?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think when I made the first four pieces, it kind of felt like a good place to start. So I don't, I guess I'm all for adding more pieces if it's going to like complete the story, or just, show what the artist wanted to share. I was honestly just thinking of doing another three at the moment, and then possibly adding more. So I guess I'm not sure what like a complete collection would look like, but just kind of when I feel like the story's complete and I've kind of shared all of the things I wanted to share.
Yeah, that's interesting, and that's, I think that's a really good principle to tell the story and then release as many pieces as it takes kind of to tell the story you want to tell. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but on the other hand, also collectors are searching for rarity, right? They want to know how many pieces will come. And if you are in the making, you can always add one piece more. So it's unclear when from a collector who also want to speculate a little bit, it's much more interesting to know that we have finally reached the full amount of pieces, because then you can calculate the floor. If the artist, for example, drops another piece for just half an ETH and everything is right now at the floor of 5 pieces, then the price goes down. But if the collection is finished, then there's no possibility to that it's so easy to undercut the floor. Of course, some collector could go panic and undercut the floor. But if I know that the collection drops at once, then I know then I can calculate the floor much easier. So for as an investment, I would prefer to know the maximum size of the collection. And if the artist launches the full collection, then I know that the maximum size has already reached, you know? And then you can also, for example, see, okay, the collection has 10 pieces, 5 are sold out, and next day 8 are sold out. Then I can be pretty sure that the 9th and the 10th piece of the 10-piece collection is a good investment. So as a collector's view.
Yeah, that all makes sense from the collector's view and especially the financial side of it, which of course matters, even though it's always best to collect without having to think too much about having to sell, right? But I think from an artist's
to know that you have some valuable pieces, right? I enjoy looking at on pieces which are expensive much more than stuff which is going down.
Okay.
Much more joy.
I have to disagree on that. Like, price doesn't matter when I'm looking at the piece. Like, so the majority of things I collect because I like it. And then kind of the price I paid and whether or not it's possible to sell it, that doesn't matter after collecting it. But keep in mind, I typically invest in NFT projects for the profit side of things, and then take the profits and buy art for those. So I'm not depending on being able to sell any art, which is the way I prefer. Of course.
You don't. Okay, maybe I've said it wrong. So I buy the art for the art, right? But for example, I have some physical pieces in my house, and I, of course, it's a much better feeling if I know that this piece had some value when I bought it. So art is usually something which is you buy it also because it has value, right? Not just because it looks nice, because then I could also buy a poster, or I could get a print of something. But I'm buying the art because it is very valuable. It's not something you can get every day. It's something which is rare and which has a high price. I think that's at least, sorry if I'm coming up again from the traditional market, but people like to buy stuff which is expensive and rare. Forever, since ages, since ever, they want to have a piece which is, yeah, expensive.
Yeah, there is this side of the coin, which is kind of the art as kind of the status symbol, to call it that, right? You can buy an expensive piece of art and put it on the wall, and others see it, and
yeah, and other people will admire it. You make a party at home, and then they say, oh, it's a piece from that artist. I know it's expensive. Oh, it's a totally great feeling, you know? Shilling your art, yes.
Yeah, so that's one motivation, right, for buying art. But there are many different reasons for buying. In terms of collection size, we had this discussion on the Discord earlier as well, where I posted a question of I made a collection of 16 pieces, and then what should I do if I make more pieces in the same style? And I think we had a really good back and forth there, talking about kind of how it is important to stick to what you say from the outset, right? When you create a collection and you say there's going to be 16 pieces, as I did, that should be it. It should be final. And if there's more art coming later, then it's a new collection. I was also wondering, in terms of this topic, I wanted to ask Yoon, because you've made a lot of different art in many different styles, and wanted to hear how you're thinking about kind of the collection aspect of all of the various styles and all of the great art that you've put in. Yeah, you've already created various collections, right?
Yes. I think before I want to come to this, I wanted to say that, Nadia, if you really need to leave, there is no pressure to stay, because I think like 10 minutes ago you mentioned that you really need to leave, but you're of course welcome to stay.
Nadia, thank you so much for staying on. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You.
I mean, you're in like a beautiful Miami conference, so please don't let us stop you.
Yeah, this was a very German dry joke, you know. Of course, you're not forced to stay.
You're good. I just didn't want to drop off without saying bye, but thanks, you guys.
Yeah, really, thank you. It was really nice to have you here and talk to
thank
you.
Thank you. Bye.
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 Bye-bye.
I think when I made I don't know how many collections I already have, but I think if you go about a collection, you basically just try to make a collection that is coherent in style, or a particular theme that you want to, or a story that you want to tell. I actually have right now I have the problem that I'm working on a new collection, and I'm actually exactly going through the same question that we have been discussing, or that Espresso has talked about right now, is like the sizes and and also when to release it, whether to release everything one after the other or to release all at once. And I have to say, like, for pieces, that takes me much longer to create, particularly the illustrations. I think it's really hard for me to release everything all at once. So in that case, I would probably release it, like, you know, continuous drop. But sometimes the illustration, I mean, it also takes me time to think about the story that I want to create, which can sometimes take like 2 or 3 weeks, I have to say. And so if I would need like plan out this, I would probably need a year, I have to say, until I can release the whole collection. And I think it really just depends on the story that you want to tell. And sometimes I think it's just totally fine to drop like the pieces continuously. While I have some abstracts where the story was kind of like clear to me and the style was clear. And so it was just, and like for the, like some of the abstract collections I have, I would say they probably took me 2 or 3 weeks to create. So it was just like more doable, like in a certain time frame, to release them all at once, compared to the illustrations. That's does this answers your question?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, go on.
So okay, thanks. So what I was thinking, or at least what me and Olaf were thinking about, so you know, we are starting some collaborations, and all these other artists are much more major in the NFT space. So we had the idea to accompany this with a website, so that people can see what we are doing while it's still not for sale. So usually you put it on OpenSea, and then people expect that it's available sooner or later. So I was thinking about making this more like a campaign. So you write about the stuff on Twitter and let people see what you are planning. But for us, I think we will try it out to list the pieces on the website so that people are known to it. And then we wanted to release it after each other, but in the a little bit farther future. So this is what, for example, the style which a foundation is recommending, that if you want to go for a higher price, that you should really, really invest a lot of time into the marketing, so that everybody knows in advance that the pieces are there. And this is a plan, at least, that I will try with our collaboration pieces, because otherwise I would waste the time and energy these other artists have invested in us, or better, it took them time to give us some art, and they don't want to screw it because we are just new. Maybe if I wouldn't have these collaborations, I would maybe do it differently. But for us, we really don't want to make it wrong. So our decision is to drop them all at once or after each other, but not now. So that's our plan. Looks a little bit web 2.0, but on the other hand, we are planning a campaign. This would mean that we will wait.
Yeah, but that makes a lot of sense. It's supply and demand at the end of the day, right? And you need to drum up the demand, so to speak. Sorry for sounding so mechanical about it, but it's really important what you mentioned about making the art known also before it's listed.
It's very natural for me to make websites, right? Maybe it's also that some artists are not that much focused on building websites, right? So for them it would be more making it so for them it's the main the best possibility to list them listed would be OpenSea or Foundation, which is great. Yeah, maybe this is a special case here, because I can do websites very fast, you know. half a yeah, week, and we have the Angel Wings website, right?
You're really good at making websites, so that, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, of course, making a website around a collab project makes sense, but of course, not everyone have the option to do that. But investing some time and effort into making it known that you're going to drop something, I think it should be part of a launch strategy for regular artists.
Like I have seen a lot of promo videos in the last time. So for the photography pieces, a lot of these photo artists are now making really amazing teasers, like for a cinema movie or something. So they are really, this is some new trend I'm seeing, that they are really making a promo video for it. This is something new. Have you seen this trend?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
For example, last time I posted one of these promo videos, and I watched the video, and now I want to have the images, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah, and I think this is also why we rely so much on Twitter, especially, because that's one of the easier ways of making the artwork known. And when you list something on, or mint something on OpenSea, like it goes into this enormous collection of already existing work on OpenSea, while at least on Foundation, I can get an email from the artists I follow whenever they create something new. So that makes it a bit easier to keep track of what's being launched. But just minting something on OpenSea is like only step one, I think, in a launch strategy. And artists should, of course, do as much as they can to make the art known, but it's tricky. And that's also why we're here, right, with the gallery, to put the spotlight on artists.
Yeah, right. I just wanted this to add another way.
Yeah, you guys have pretty much covered most of the launch strategy parts, but I just had a private DM from one of our artists asking about pricing again. And I guess it's also part of launch strategies, right? Because I don't think on OpenSea you can specify a US dollar amount. It's still all in crypto, right? Can you specify something in
DAI
or
something?
Yeah,
you could potentially. Yeah, you could, but nobody will do it. They will laugh at you.
Because my point to the artist was that I think people in the NFT space still go back to fiat currency when they buy art and still value it in terms of US dollars, let's say. So if you, let's say, had a collection of 100, and you had priced them at 0.05 ETH, and ETH suddenly skyrocketed to like 7K, you're not going to be able to sell your pieces, right? So I think it's just an additional dimension that's a bit stressful for artists.
Yeah,
I can list it for ETH, but I can make offer in any currency. That's how some apes got stolen, you know? They offered 150 DAI.
But
not for sale as an artist. I think there's only ETH.
Oh, yeah, that age-old trick of offering in DAI. Ugh.
This happened last week. There was some popular sale around 100 or 150 ETH, and then some other ape owners got an offer, 150, yeah, pff, and it's gone. DAI.
Yeah, that's not good. But yeah, Kasper, you're right that... Yeah, kind of the entire NFT art market is in crypto, and it does matter whether ETH is 2,500 or 3,500, right?
Most people actually think, including myself, you compare this to the equivalent dollar price, right?
Yeah, for sure. That's my point. Everybody still prices in dollars, but unfortunately, there's this intermediary currency, right? That's ETH. Okay, I won't say unfortunately because I hold ETH, so fortunately.
Yeah, but you're right. And the funny fact is you don't want to buy stuff when ETH goes down because you have a bad mood, but when ETH goes up, you are much more willing to pay in ETH, even if it's now more expensive, which is a funny fact how our brain is working.
Sorry, do you say when ETH goes up, you're willing to pay more?
That's because that's a bull run. During a bull run, everybody buys stuff, and this is exactly the wrong time to buy it, right?
You should. I've actually experienced the opposite effect on Solana chain, because that's actually where I started my NFT journey, and I bought a lot of my PFP projects when Solana was at $40, and obviously I freely just threw SOL at the NFTs, right? So like 10 SOL or 20 SOL was like $800, so it didn't matter as much. But when SOL went up to $250, all the NFT PFP prices dropped dramatically. So that's where I got totally convinced that everybody still sees NFT prices in US dollar terms, and it's not, nobody sees it in the crypto denominations. And I think it's less of an effect on the ETH ecosystem, because I feel the ETH NFT ecosystem is a little bit more mature. But yeah, I think I so think that if ETH had a bull run right now, my bet would be that people would start selling their NFTs.
So lot of podcasters are talking about this. So they are different. They differentiate between people which are long time in the space and newcomers. For newcomers, it's of course an opportunity to change their fiat into ETH when the price is down, and then of course it's for them it's usually more attractive to for example finally invest into an ape with your full bankroll. Some people on Twitter are writing about exactly this, which I don't understand. And the other thing is, if you are more into crypto, then yeah, you start to begin just seeing ETH and don't calculate back. So for example, at least for me, I'm looking just 0.1 ETH. Oh, that's still doable. One ETH, very expensive, but I'm not always looking at the calculator anymore. At least for me, right? But I'm driven for mood. I know that I won't buy when everybody is in a bad mood, right? When everything is going down, I don't want to invest in anything, because it would potentially catch a falling knife.
Yeah, so I also have to say that I've stopped converting to USD. Sounds like we're in the minority, so. But it's just easier to think of ETH as the base currency. To kind of segue back to the launch strategy topic, I think one important thing to be aware of as a new artist, I believe, is kind of the pricing, how to price your work when starting out. And of course, there's no right answer, but I think it's good to be aware at least that, for example, if you're on ETH mainnet, you shouldn't really go below 0.02, I think, because at that point, the gas starts to be more expensive than the NFT itself, and collectors don't like that. They want to pay the artist, not the miners. While if you're on Foundation, as we've talked about before, probably the minimum is something like 0.1, so five times as much as on OpenSea, simply because of the fees that Foundation take from that sale.
From the artist. So the artist pays in advance. you're right. So the artist won't make an offer which is below his gas price, for sure.
And this is also why I've been very bullish on Tezos for art in particular, because Tezos doesn't have this kind of high gas fee issue. So you see kind of art prices in a much bigger range. Like I think 0.02 ETH is still, I don't know how much, $60 or something, which would be like 20 Tezos, and then you can still get art for way less than 20 Tezos. So that's also something to take into account when starting out. And in terms of collection size and pricing, if people ask me, I would say start with a small collection and a low price just to get going.
I think that was a wonderful sentence to finish our discussion. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a very nice summary of how, despite all the different dimensions of launching a collection, just start simple and small, right? And yeah, I think unless we have questions from the audience, if not, we have again overrun our 1 hour estimate. But it's good. It's good. It's good that we're talking about stuff.
I think it was really cozy this time. Really cozy. I'm getting used to spaces.
Yeah, it's nice.
So okay. Shall we round it up, Yun?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was. We had a great chat again this time, right? With very interesting art and to discuss and great insights about how to organize a collection, pricing strategy from a collector's point of view. So, yeah. So thank you, everyone. Any additions before we end this episode?
Yes, we will see each other again next Sunday.
Okay. All right. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you.
Yep. Have a great day. Thank you, everyone, for time.
Thank you for listening. Bye.